You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Take one. Knock, knock.
Who it is?
We're Steven and Dana, and we can't believe you found our fucking podcast.
Our podcast.
We're so glad you're listening to it. We would never listen to it.
I don't even want to listen to it to edit it.
I don't even want to wake up in the morning.
We're Steven and Dana, and we're
in the room.
We're inside of Frenchie's hair.
Happy Friday, Stephen. Well, it's a Tuesday because we drop on Tuesdays.
But I'm talking to you now in the present, in the room.
Do we have any catch-up to do? You saw some shows.
I saw some shows. I saw Slave Play and I saw Darren Brown, The Secret. Both of which I recommend everyone go see.
Wildly different.
Both magical.
Both magical. I haven't seen either.
Very different ways.
Yeah.
One's actual magic.
I don't know anything about either of them. Tell us all.
Darren Brown, The Secret. I'm not going to tell you much because it's a secret.
Oh, is that?
But if you're into magic and mind reading and stuff like that, go for it.
Is it a play?
No.
Is it like a one-man show?
Yes.
It's an actual like magic show.
Yeah. Darren Brown is a British mind reader, magician.
Oh, thank you.
Musician.
Okay. Okay.
And there's audience participation.
What?
And it's completely random, and it's so random that he brought up Emily Skinner.
What? This is happening in New York City right now.
I went with a Tony voter, and there were a bunch of other Tony voters there. And
look
they
at
were
you
the
dropping
only
names.
Only ones who knew that that was Emily Skinner.
Oh, good for you.
It was an added layer.
Where is this theater? Where are we?
It's at the Court.
The
East
Court.
Of Broadway.
So it's an actual Broadway,
and a Broadway
situation.
House. Yeah. You may have seen Sylvia there.
I did, indeed. Those seats are short at the Court. We are I remember being cramped at the Court.
That wasn't
I saw,
my experience.
I saw Cripple of Inishman a couple times there. Couple times, because I love Martin McDonagh.
Slave Play was a lot.
I heard it's a lot. My roommate
Ooh,
said
girl.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot, but it is masterfully done. Those performances are out of control. Out of control.
Yeah. I have to be in a...
Sometimes twice a day. Are
a
you
mood
kidding?
To see that, I think.
You have to be in a mood to see it, but you also need to see it.
I promise I will. And with that, I think we are going to introduce...
I'm Jamie Dumont.
And I'm Rob Russo.
And we are co-hosts of...
The Fabulous Invalid!
Woo!
Yay!
Yeah, okay.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yes.
We've done it.
We've done
it
50 times.
And an empty seat for Jen Simard.
Oh. Yeah. Jennifer, who has a show tonight.
Right? Yes.
She's literally... Probably putting her mic tape on the back of her neck as we speak.
And go
Ooh,
see Mean Girls.
The Nice Avenue tramp stamp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really great.
I love that.
Nice. Well,
she calls it her show jacket, by the way.
She does. Yeah.
That's
Yeah.
Because,
really you know, they don't make show jackets anymore.
They don't.
So that's her show jacket. Yeah. So
that's really
Jennifer Samar came up with that.
So funny. If you guys haven't listened to the fabulous Invalid,
then you're not fabulous. You're just an invalid.
Yeah, it's truly remarkable, and you know, we're so honored that you are on our little dog and pony show.
We're thrilled to be here.
Yes, we just met. We're new friends.
Yes,
through the Broadway Podcast Network.
That's not entirely true. That's not how we met.
Oh.
We met Broadway Podcast Network
through us.
Thank you. Yes.
But
I'm having a stroke.
I stalked you on Instagram, I think is what it.
Ooh, was there some stalking?
No,
you came to me. Oh, yeah. No,
I came to you. Because you followed the podcast. And we posted a picture, and I was wearing a shirt that caught your eye.
Right.
So you commented on it, and I connected the dots that you were Rick's husband, that you were the fabulous invalid. Like, I figured out, I put a face to the name that I had known for quite some time. So I messaged you just saying congratulations on a year. Like, podcast to podcast, that's really hard. And you're like, come to the party.
Yeah. Okay. Say more about the shirt. Well, you wore it to the party.
I wore it to the party.
But you'll love the shirt. Of course I know the shirt.
It was the signature cow cape hair slipper.
Yeah.
Shirt.
And if anybody doesn't know what that reference is, turn off your phone. You don't get to listen to your show or our show.
Yeah.
I think is simple.
You've come to the wrong place.
Math.
But then that turned out to really be a curse because right after your party was the flea market.
That's right.
And I wore a different Into the Woods show shirt, a vintage one.
Right.
And I realized that I need to do some wardrobe enhancement.
I loved that shirt. I commented on that shirt.
I mean, it's a fair
it's
shirt.
A pretty incredible shirt.
Thank you, eBay.
Yeah.
I set up search alerts.
Really? For that shirt specifically?
Into the Woods Broadway shirt.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I knew they existed.
I spent about 5 years.
It took 5 years.
Hunting down an original Kiss of the Spider Woman window card, Richard Rivera. It's harder than you think to find. I guess a lot were in print. I don't know. And I lost an auction. I was at the final preview of Big Fish on Broadway, and the auction was ending like right as the curtain call. And I took out my phone and I logged into eBay and I like watched it disappear as we're like applauding Norbert Leo Butz. It's like, I thought about like 1 cent, you know, one of those last minute eBay moments.
No. Anyway, you turned on your phone during the show?
During the curtain call.
That was my takeaway too.
Yeah, that's
was the curtain call, and it was in service to obtaining a Kiss of the Spider Woman window card.
This is the gayest thing I've ever heard. We've already established this is a gay podcast about a gay subject.
In a gay room.
In a gay room. We're in a pink room.
Can we describe the room that we're in right now?
Go for it.
I'm staring at Liz Smith. Who are you staring at?
Oh, yes. Gay. Gay. Iconically gay. LA Dodgers, not gay.
McGovern for government.
Not gay.
It's kind of gay. Come on.
That's Joel Gray. Right?
Yeah, there's a lot of Joel in this room. There's three.
There's a lot of Joel in this whole world.
I see three. But I haven't turned around.
A poster from the 1972 Olympics, Munich.
Yeah.
Wow.
And speaking of gay, there's a picture of Damon Duano whispering into Patrick Vail's ear in front of the Wicked
logo.
Whispering,
mimicking. The
yeah,
logo.
Mimic
this
the logo.
This room is very up to date. I mean, these shows are still running.
There's Reeve Carney and Hadestown.
These are recent acquisitions all around.
Yeah.
The photos on the wall.
So for those of you who don't know, we are in the conference room, or as my husband calls it, the meeting room of my husband's office, which is also where we record The Fabulous Invalid for the most part.
And
that office is
O&M. Broadway Press Firm.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the office itself is almost every inch of every wall is covered with artwork, and that artwork can range from Joel Gray's pieces to show posters to personal memorabilia to even there's a few like that red and black thing.
LA Dodgers.
Pennant. Yeah.
There's Francis Tamayo, the Mexican artist. There's a lot of, but it's all stuff that's like deeply personal to my husband, or quite literally from the walls of one of our apartments or homes or something.
Mm-hmm. It's a melange, if you will.
Yeah. I'll come home every once in a while and there'll be a hole on the wall.
Right.
And I'll go, I must have taken it to the office.
The office.
This is true. This is the life I live. Yeah.
Your husband is Rick?
My husband is Rick Miramontes, the publicist. Yeah, did you not know that?
I did not know that.
Oh, do you know Rick?
I've been on conference calls with Rick.
Oh, you
because
have?
Because they did our PR for Best Worst Thing That Ever Could Have Happened. The documentary film that I worked on.
Of course.
Yes. That's... Scott Rudin executive produced it, and he's like, I only work with Rick. And we're like, great. Great.
That's one of the best theater documentaries ever. Oh, I love that. I've seen it three or four times. In fact, I'm probably going to watch it again in the next couple of weeks.
Now all I want to do is watch it.
It's
I should watch it again. I haven't watched it in a couple of years.
Well, because it's so perfect. It does, primarily, we roll along what Every Little Step does for A Chorus Line, which is, it is the film version of that show that actually... does justice
it's
to
the essence of what's happening because exactly it takes the real life with the show topics and kind of mixes them all up.
Cool.
Thanks. I worked on that for a long time.
That documentary was very much the beginning of our friendship.
So how did you two meet?
We met at the Duplex.
Friends show, you know.
Right.
We started miming, you know, eating chicken because we were both hungry and like, I don't know him. He doesn't know me. And we were like, meet after the show. No. Yeah, we connected.
Gay, our first date, we went to the AMC in Union Square to watch the Fandango event, the Fathom event, rather. Miss Saigon.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
We see and you. We were comparing who the most famous people on our phones were.
Yeah.
I remember doing that.
I remember you.
You gave me a couple.
You gave me a couple.
Can you give names? Can you give names?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so. I have Barbara Streisand.
Fuck. Oh,
and
me.
It is tried and tested, babe.
She answers.
Not her, but I heard someone answers.
I heard
her in the back be like, who?
Man who works in her basement.
It's the, oh my God. Michael, you're
Byron Seller, yeah.
I'm pleading the fifth on this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
Why?
I actually didn't expect an answer.
Okay.
Mine would be Hillary.
I'll give you more. I have Bette Midler.
Yours is
obviously
Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. Rob usually wins this one.
Well, I don't know if that's winning. I mean, Barbara Streisand is pretty.
You have famous secretaries in your phone.
Thank you.
They burned it in theaters.
The secretary is not a toy.
No.
By the way.
Heard that.
Yeah.
Are we double dating right now?
Yes, we are. Yes.
I feel like we're on a double date because you're like our podcast daddies.
Hello.
I was
not
gonna say
the
like
first
sister-
time I've been called.
I was gonna say like sister podcast, but
I called my fairy godmother earlier this afternoon.
Yeah,
I feel like
it's
that's
something
pretty good.
Like
that's
that,
sweet.
Like the more professional, amazing podcast version of ours.
Yeah,
but welcome.
Thank you
for having us.
Yeah, we're so excited to be in the pink room. That's right. That's where we're. But we're here. We're queer. It's National Coming Out Day. So it is.
Oh, I'm gay.
So us.
Everyone in this room is gay.
We're in the pink room.
Wait, how did we all come out?
Like this.
Jazz hands.
I called my mom while I was crossing the street because I was in a bad mood and I thought I'd stir a pot.
Wow.
And it didn't work because it like didn't phase her.
Yeah.
So then
I
was just frustrated.
I hope you looked both ways.
Yeah, I was just like... It was like that scene in Devil Wears Prada where she's like trying to get the flight out of Florida. I'm just crossing the street and just everything is the worst.
Yeah.
So I'm like, Mom, I'm gay. And she's like, okay. And then went on to tell me some story about something. I was like, wait, you can't glaze over that. I made a big proclamation.
Yeah.
She was
this
like,
this is my ammunition.
You think you made a big proclamation, but your first word was Cinderella. So we're good. We got it.
It's very advanced for a first word.
Well, in my house.
How'd you guys come out?
That's real.
Well, the story's a little long because I came out in two sections. I came out in high school, like right before I graduated from high school, senior year. I was sort of outed, and that's a much longer story. But I will say that about a few weeks later, I came out to my parents by the fact that I was dating a boy who was much older who lived in Hollywood. And in those days, my mother would scan the phone bill and any number that was sort of out of our area code, she would call to find out what I was doing.
Wow.
And so there were a number of these Hollywood exchanges to my boyfriend's phone number. His name was Marty. And so my mother called the number and she said, "This is Mrs. Richard Dumont. How do you know my son, James?" And Marty's roommate answered the phone and he said, "Oh, that must be the kid from Pasadena that Marty's fucking, click." And that's how my mother found out I was gay.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes.
Does she consult on Ryan Murphy television shows? Like, that is
she'd be a great Ryan Murphy character. I haven't met him.
Yeah, kind of like campy and amazing.
Yeah, yeah, she's a character.
Not really.
That's
pretty wild.
Well, it also, I think it's it goes to that classic thing of like, careful what you're poking your nose into, because you're going to, you know, you're going to find some messy shit.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's how it came out to my parents, at least.
That's hysterical. I told my sister first. In a car ride, she picked me up from college, and we were driving to where she was living, and we were stuck in traffic, and I told her. But the better part, the better story is that she told my mom, and my mom, this is so perfect. So we had a house fire when I was in high school, and we like, had to like you know, move, and you know there was a whole process, years and years, things smelled like smoke and boxes for years, whatever. So I get home from college my freshman year, and I'm on the, like, I'm outside of our house in the sort of, like, carport breezeway area, and I'm going through a box,
if you will.
I'm going through a box of framed Broadway window cards that, you know, had been adorning my childhood bedroom because I was that child, and I'm, like, you know, deciding which ones I want to, you know, rehang, whatever, cleaning them up because some of them needed to be cleaned. And my mom comes out, stands in the doorway and says, "You know, your sister tells me that you're gay." And I was like, "Yes." And she said, "You know, how come no one tells me anything?" Or whatever. She was like, just exasperated that, like, how come I wasn't told? And then just like walked away. And I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's that."
How old were you?
Yeah. I was 18.
And the room full of Broadway show cards didn't tip anyone off?
Well, everyone knew. I mean, I had a Lacaggio Fall window card above my bed at the age of 10. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Who are we fooling here?
Nobody.
Nobody was fooled.
Nobody.
I just love that, though. It was like, you don't tell me? You know, she was like, not that she wasn't mad that I was gay. It was just like, tell me.
She wasn't in the loop.
She wasn't
that's
in
the
loop,
story.
You know?
Like, that's you hope that story for everyone.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, that's similar to mine. I mean, my mom listens to this podcast. Hello, Sue.
Hey, Sue.
Hi, Sue.
My mom is Susan.
My mom is not a Susan.
It's the 50s.
Do not call Sue a Susan. but yeah, I think, you know, parents want to know, and it's a very like, that's a mom thing to be like, well, who else have you told, and why wasn't I told? And I mean, it came to me later that, you know, parents, you are taking away something that they could have been useful to you for. How can I say that? You are taking away the opportunity for them to be a parent to a gay child. So that was kind of another guilty version of that for me, like the figuring that out, like, oh, yeah, I didn't allow my parents to know me fully. So, I mean, that's all part of dealing with that, but I don't know. I had to look at it from their perspective, too. Like, allow me to parent you. You know, allow me to have a gay child.
You were also older.
Oh, I was like 26 when I think coming out to my parents is when you, like, truly come out, because everyone else is just everyone else.
Yeah,
and fine. Everyone's fine.
Well, they're oftentimes the scarier people to tell.
Yes.
Because you're putting to the test unconditional love.
Yes.
Like, here's a condition.
Right. Also, and you can always get new friends.
Right. And it can be hardest to be most honest with the people you're closest to.
Absolutely.
Who are you closest to more?
Yeah.
It's in theory, right?
And then, you are, like, you're living with these people.
Your life is speak for yourself.
You are half them, right? You know, like.
Totally.
So
I think I'm
that,
truly,
right?
Like, 50-50,
yeah.
My parents.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
It's totally real.
Let's talk about your podcast.
Let's do it.
How did it come to be? Who came to who?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's sort of a cosmic aligning of things, if you will. We just mentioned Hillary Clinton. So I worked for a number of years, for those who don't know, in politics and government, public service. Worked on her 2008 campaign for president, spent 4 years at the State Department. And then on her 2016 campaign for president, on the senior staff of that effort. And spoiler alert, we lost, which, you know.
I'll have to Google that.
Yeah, you should look it up.
I don't remember.
It's a whole story. Yeah, it's worth reading about.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember crying shaking or waking up in a...
Or still being depressed.
So
the day after, though, amid all the, like, emotional trauma of that, I had a little voice in my head that was like, okay, well, you thought you were going to go work in the White House for the next 48 years. Now you get to stay in New York and you can do anything you want. And the voice said, do something in the theater. And my most immediate impulse was, oh, I should do a podcast because I love talking and thinking about theater. And on the other side of Manhattan, or in Manhattan, I was in Brooklyn at the time, Jamie was having similar dreams of a podcast. Oh, okay.
I like the way you're
I was going to hand it off to you.
We're padding to see Jamie and his...
I always tell this story, so it's nice to hear it.
I think it's interesting that we both were thinking of it at the same time. But then I sort of like quickly abandoned it because, as you know, it's like, how do I start? How am I doing it technically? Like, what microphone am I buying? Like, I just got very overwhelmed. So I decided instead to start my own blog website called Stage Left. Which, you know, I write for a living, so it seemed like a natural thing. Okay, I mean, instead of talking about theater, maybe I'll write about theater. So I started writing reviews and posting them and sending out a weekly newsletter, which I still do. Just sent my latest one out earlier today.
Where can people find that?
Stageleft.nyc. You can sign up, subscribe for free to receive my weekly email newsletter. And then the website itself hosts all my content. So I review at least 2 to 3 shows a week in New York, which for, you know, a solo person who this isn't a full-time job is... So I was doing that for about a year and a half, when I got an email out of the blue from, I believe it was from Andy Snyder, who said, I wanted to, would you be interested in talking to someone about a podcast project? And I was like, sure, why not? I had no idea, you know, what it could be. And then Jamie and I met, and within minutes, it was sort of obvious, at least to him, that we were a great pair and sort of like creepily the same person. We created the Fabulous Emily.
What Rob's leaving out from the story is that when we met, what I was looking for was actually someone to take over a small segment of the show. So my original concept, which is basically the show that we have, was that it would be a 3-segment show. The first segment, we'd just talk about current events or topics. There would be an interview section, and then the third section would be a short history piece that would somehow relate back to something that happened in the show, most likely with the guest. And I had already lined up Leslie Kritzer to be my co-host and Jennifer Smart to be my co-host, which is a longer story. And I really just wanted someone to do this history thing. And Andy Snyder had said, you should talk to Rob. He's this smart fella. You guys will get along. And we met to have coffee. And literally within 5 minutes of meeting Rob, I was like, do you want to be my co-host? Do you want to produce this with me? Do you want to just be my friend for the rest of my life? And I mean, almost.
No, I mean, that's,
almost
yeah,
quite
that's
literally.
From what happened.
And apparently,
this
from,
is verbatim, how, like, literally how we met.
That's what
happened
for
to
Rob,
us too.
For Rob's run of the short story, it wasn't quite like that for him, but that's okay. I'm all right with that. But then we started working on the show like kind of immediately.
Yeah, within, you know, I think I accepted the next day, like formally accepted.
Yeah.
I'm not
well,
the person who,
actually, you know. what did happen, this I'm very clear on, you sent me an email, and I also should note, I'm not good with people. I don't make friends easily. I'm
what are you talking?
No, it's true.
It's
true.
I can vouch. It's true.
No, it's true.
We had a 3.5-hour coffee without a breath of dead air.
I know, which is rare. Maybe I'm turning a new leaf. I don't know. But the point is, I got home from meeting Rob, and my first thought was like, I was too much. It's too fast. He looked freaked out. And I get an email about an hour later that says, you know, I'm interested in talking about this co-host thing with you if you, you know, if it's a real offer or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think if the offer is still on the table, I'm interested in talking and pursuing being a co-host.
And then, like, literally the next time we met for dinner and we went to see a show together. And within, like, between walking to the from dinner to the to the theater, I was like, "Do you want to produce this with me?" And the look on your face was kind of priceless. You did look like, who is this crazy person?
When what you know I? You're in love, you
know.
No,
it's immediate.
You just know.
And a true love lasts forever.
And true love, ergo, is a podcast.
Yes.
You know, like, I want to spend a lot of time with you.
Yeah.
And I want to talk to you, and I care about what you have to say.
And I want it all on tape.
Right.
Exactly.
And I will say this, because I don't ever actually say this when I tell the story. The original idea I had for the podcast was it was going to be a dinner party. And it was going to be in our, it was going to be, I was, we, my husband and I used to entertain a lot. And I was sitting around a dinner table, our dinner table. And it was this person and that person.
Was it this table?
It was this table we're actually
yes.
at. Yes, we're in the conference room table is our old dining room table.
Yeah, there you go.
Quite frankly. And I was like, it's, you know, it's this person and that person and famous person that and interesting person that.
Barbra Streisand.
And it was
Has Barbra Streisand sat at this table?
She has not. I don't know Barbra Streisand.
Does but she that, remember me calling?
She does.
Okay.
And she's asked you to stop calling.
Great. Well, okay.
She's actually blocked her phone. We should try right now and see what happens.
She saved your number as Jack McFarlane.
Yeah.
But what I thought would be really interesting was to just do a dinner party, right? And what it turns out is people don't really like to eat and talk and be recorded at the same time.
It's hard.
Very hard.
Yeah.
And from our own experience, people don't like to listen to people eating on podcasts.
I disagree with that, but yes, the rest of the world.
There are whole ASMR channels where you can just watch and listen to people eat. That is not my version of ASMR. I do not like that.
Yeah.
But, you know,
you're
people
liberal.
Are making millions.
You're liberal.
You can literally
I'm liberal?
Find that.
Yeah, you'll allow it.
I can't do it.
Is there
I'd
others,
rather have
for
people
others,
like
for others, for others.
Tap
yeah.
or. I can do just visual like this. That'll put me right to sleep.
Wow.
Yeah.
You it's really nice. Do need to see Darren Brown.
You have to go see Darren
I can't
Brown.
Wait. I haven't seen a magic show.
Yeah.
Dana.
In
and
a
it,
long
and it sounds
time.
It sounds silly to call it a magic show. I mean, it is technically
it's,
a magic show, but it's like a
but it's like
Harry
Vavillion.
Potter was the most magic.
Yes.
Very, he's in it.
It's very
talks,
like 1930s. You feel like you're transported in time and place.
Yeah, I'm into that.
And he's a mentalist. It's like psychological.
It's oh my god.
It's not just like, you know, a man in a box of swords. Like it's
oh,
it's about more advanced than that. Yeah.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
We're gonna go together.
Oh, because you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
Oh my god!
I don't like magic. I think
Dave
mentalist.
Really
yeah,
and we're gonna go see
it.
There you go.
But what are we gonna see between now and
then? That's not till April.
Yeah, but I'm going to take you out. I'm going to wine you and dine. I will have my way with you. I promise.
I'm here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good. I look forward to it.
I'll be my best behavior.
Totally. No, please don't. And I'm serious about this.
We'll see
I am
something
too.
Else
I'm
and we'll
very,
meet up afterwards.
Very earnest.
I love that.
What?
I said we'll meet up afterwards. We'll see something the same night.
Oh, you guys
see.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
And then we'll go.
And then we'll go have drinks.
Something.
Well, no,
like
I mean, you guys have been very, very kind, very supportive of our podcast. And I want to say when you guys dropped... Like, oh shit, what is this? The Fabulous Invalid. Well, your first guest was Joel Grey.
Yes.
I'm just like, they are coming out, guns a blazing.
Yeah, it was aggressive, but.
It was aggressive.
But warranted.
It's
wow.
it's
yeah.
great.
It was
so everyone
move.
Should
yeah, I'm
be tuning
it.
In.
And they have the best swag.
The best swag? I'm walking around with a tote.
I wrap our mics in their tote.
It's
good.
You've got water bottles.
I swaddle our mix.
Do you have things for purchase, or is this just for
friends
and family?
Yeah, we're working on it.
We're working on it. We do have some swag that we could sell on the BPN website. We are also members of the BPN family.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this really, we have this great banner that was created by this fabulous artist, which is the landing page of our website.
Yeah.
So if you want... fabulousinvalid.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all these great
icons
of the theater that we love.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to do a t-shirt or a tote bag or something with that, but there's shower curtain is a
yes.
great idea.
Thank you. Thank you.
But there's a little bit of a copyright issue, so
sure.
we're because it's
yeah.
so many different images.
Yeah.
So if we can sort through that, which is a project on my list to do, then we will create those.
You have a project.
I have a lot of projects. I love a project.
You love a project.
I love a project.
I love a project.
Yeah.
What do invalids need? Like a wheelchair?
Well, that's not...
Like a
that's a metaphor.
That's not what our show... Do you know what our show... What the Fabulous Invalids stands for?
Yes.
No. I meant, do you know what?
Let's tell the listeners.
Because the term "fabulous invalid" is a play by Kaufman and Hart, written in 1933 or 4.
38.
Is it 38? Oh, it's 38. It might be.
Ron, double check it.
Alexa.
And Alexa, check "The Fabulous Invalid." But basically, it's a theater. It's a play about an opening night the theater world. And it wasn't a very successful play, but what happened was the term "The Fabulous Invalid" became, what's the word I'm looking for, Rob?
It's like a loving way of talking about Broadway.
Like a nickname.
A nickname for Broadway.
An endearing term for the theater.
1938, December 3rd.
Thank you, Google.
1938.
And basically what it refers to is that the theater is always in decline and always being reborn again. It's that sort of circle of life thing where a show closes and another opens. Mm-hmm. And that's what I loved about The Fabulous Invalid as a title. It certainly has raised a few eyebrows because the word invalid is, I think, one of those words that people react to.
It's a bit taboo, I think, in contemporary culture.
Right.
The word invalid.
Exactly.
We kind of liked that. We kind of liked that it was something that would raise eyebrows and pique interest. And people would say, what is that? They'd want to lean in and know more.
It is a throwback term. It sounds fabulous.
Sure. Yeah.
Regardless.
And my first show title, Break a Leg, was taken.
Yeah, that's the real story.
That's the real story. Was that I had this whole thing.
Let's
I was like,
honest,
Break a Leg.
Yeah.
I had a list of like 40 titles and da da da. And then
we're
finally,
working on a logo design, right?
Break a Leg was the first idea I had as a show title. And I was like, I can't do that, right? And then it dawned on me, that's a great show title. But there is another podcast somewhere in the Midwest.
Out of respect,
I thought, I don't want to do that to somebody else because it's taken. And
Names are hard.
Well, this was like, this actually, Rob, our big first thing together that we did was right after Rob agreed to join me in this. And by that, I mean join me in co-producing it, which is different than what Leslie and Jennifer do, which is, it's a different role.
Mm-hmm.
And our first thing we did together was figure out what this title would be.
Yeah. And the logo, and the mark.
The logo and the website. And
it kind of sounds like the Drowsy Chaperone.
Right.
Yes.
You know, like,
100%.
Like
yes.
The Fabulous Invalid. It's something like a, I don't really know what it means.
A constant
but
wife.
It doesn't matter.
That's like, that was a play.
Our list of what Merrily was going to, or best worst thing that ever could have happened, what that was going to be named was hysterical. One of my favorites was Fuck Charlie. Exclamation point.
You have to have the exclamation.
And that
That's
was
key.
Like at the top of the list for so long.
Wow.
Like,
okay.
Are we really, like, it's got to break through them all. You know, you got to like, that's why we went with a really long title.
That's amazing.
Because it's got to stand out.
Someone shared a photo on social media recently that was a memo that Steven Spielberg wrote when they were developing Back to the Future. And it was about.
I just watched that for the first time.
Get out.
And it was about the title of the film. And I forget who authored it. I'm not sure if it was Spielberg himself. But basically it was like, I'm not sure about this title, Back to the Future. What about Return to the Past or something? And it's like all these other titles that are just so obviously worse.
Yeah.
You know, but they're like having this debate. Like, should we name it Back to the Future? I don't know. Like, and it's all in this memo memorialized. It's pretty funny.
But how much of that is
because you know it?
Because you know,
right?
Like, Return to the Past is, I think, just as strong as Back to the Future. It's just not what we know.
Well, they were concerned about Return of the Jedi being another. Like, there was like this, it's all teased out.
It's
always
Return to Oz.
There you go.
The Return.
In the zeitgeist.
With what's that actress's name? Do you know? She's in The Craft.
Yep.
Oh, what is
Give
her?
Me a minute.
Fruza
Balk? Fruza Balk?
Yes.
She has no idea what's happening.
She
right
I don't know.
You never saw the movie that terrified a generation?
No, I guess I'm not.
Are you a Wizard of Oz person, Rob Russo?
I'm gay. What kind of question is
we
that?
We've established.
My Wizard of Oz.
Return
person.
To Oz.
I have not seen Return to Oz, though.
Dorothy Goes Back. It's based
I feel
more...
like October is when we watch all these things.
Yes.
Spooky.
Yeah, that's... I'm actually going to see Halloween on the big screen next week. I'm very excited.
Oh, and I wasn't invited? Oh, you're going to San Francisco.
I'm going to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Of course.
Return to Oz. I don't know this. I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's freakadeeky.
It's like
I want to watch it.
Like a B movie, right? Like a C.
No, it was a big.
This was a thing?
This
was an actual.
It was a big.
Ferrugia Huerta. What is it?
Yes, I know. I took my parents like eight million times.
That's amazing. Wow.
Fairuza Balk.
Fairuza Balk.
She was in like a few movies and then, I don't know, someone got to her.
Wow.
I think she's still alive.
I do. I want to show you like the post.
Oh, no, it's Return to Oz.
Return to Oz.
I'm putting I'm looking it up on the internet and I'm writing in
Back to Oz.
Yeah.
Oh, that was different.
Yeah. That was one of the titles they were going to go with.
Yeah, probably. It was probably on a memo somewhere. It's in a drawer.
Yeah. Oh, and Nicole Williamson, Jean Marsh, Piper Laurie.
I don't know any
all
of
these
people.
They're all British actors, which leads me to believe that it was probably shot in England. But it was a very it followed some of the books very closely, whereas the original film, Wizard of Oz, sort of deviates from the book.
It's a Doll's House Part 2.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, but it really brings in all these characters that were in the later Baum books.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of controversy over that. Like,
it's deep Baum, if you will.
Wow.
Are you a top or a Baum?
I will not answer that on air. A girl needs her mystery.
Names are hard. Yeah. Wow.
I'm becoming neither. I'm becoming just a sleeper.
Yeah. Well, it's quite warm in here, too.
Yeah.
So I apologize for that. It's warm
in
the pink room.
I'm fine. Yeah, I love being in this pink room. It's like being inside bubblegum. Like a chewed piece of bubblegum.
Yeah.
That's what we are.
I like that.
We're inside a Frenchie's hair.
We are.
Mm-hmm. Or a gut that has just slurped Pepto-Bismol. I listened to the Betty Buckley episode on my way here.
Yes.
Wow.
I love, you know, what a gift it is to just press record and then just have these legends and icons just continue. I mean, you're not pulling teeth. I mean, some of them you have to pull teeth. But it's fun to just let them tell their stories and just deep dive. She's great.
She's
great.
But you can attest to this. Some people, Betty was great. Betty loves to tell a story.
Yes.
She's got a lot of great stories. But some are harder than others, right? And sometimes, you know, and this thing that we do, this podcasting thing, like I think there are shows where people just hit play and then there are shows that edit. You guys edit, right?
Yep.
Do you admit that? I mean,
there are so many different.
We edit only to improve. We don't edit to alter.
We edit to make it cohesive.
My goal is to not edit.
Right.
So when we just have someone who, like, it's easy.
Episode that you did the least amount of work on?
When we leave, I know immediately how much I have to edit, right?
So you'll be editing a lot today, is what I'm hearing.
No, I don't think so. I might rearrange some things, but. Who was the easiest or the hardest?
The episode that you did the least amount of work on.
Oh, wow.
Would you say Lonnie?
I would say maybe Lonnie, because Lonnie was also fast. It was like 45 minutes, and I was just like, done.
Right.
Well,
there's something where you have you don't have a lot of content, so you have less to.
Right.
And then there are some people who speak in paragraphs.
Yes.
Like Hillary Clinton or David Henry Kwong.
Incomplete thoughts.
Sure. And it's like, okay, well, no need to edit that. It's all there. There were no ums or uhs or, you know, I was saying earlier, no, it's just like completely thought out and delivered.
Well, Secretary Clinton certainly knows how to give a speech and be eloquent.
That episode was so great. My mom,
so
I told my mom to listen to it too, because this is just a version of Hillary that you don't always, she doesn't always get to talk about,
you know,
we always see her in these very constructed situations and it's not a theater podcast. Like how fun is that?
Yeah, no, that, I mean, that's what we were really excited about, you know, doing with that episode.
Was she in this room?
She was not in this room.
Next table.
You go to her.
I figured.
Yeah. To have a conversation. I mean, we touched on politics a little because you can't not, right? I mean, you have to. But we were really excited to sort of unearth the side of her that people don't ever get to see.
Mm-hmm.
I know her personally, and we talk about theater all the time. So to me, it was just an extension of a conversation that we have.
Absolutely.
Ongoing, you know?
But like now you have just one on tape.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
And
the rest of your days.
I loved the spin. It was like, we have Broadway's biggest theater fan. Duh.
Right?
Like, of course she belongs on this podcast.
Yeah,
like, so fun. I love that.
Yeah.
And it's true. And she's a real boon to Broadway.
Yes.
When she sees the show, puts a lot of attention on the show, gives it a lot of spotlight. I think it's great for Broadway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She gets to enjoy a show. Shows get to enjoy having her there. I think it's a huge honor to have her come see a show.
Yeah. And I think that she, I mean, not to put words in her mouth, but I think she would agree with this. But as a leader, certainly, you know, when she was in office, I think it's, you're always very mindful of how you use your time and what you, you know, sort of throw your support behind symbolically. And I think for her, the arts have always been, I mean, it traces back to her entire career as First Lady of Arkansas. She was, you know, doing everything she could to uplift the arts in all its forms, not just performing arts, but, you know, sculpture and crafts. And, you know, it's a big part of her identity. And she's used the platform that she's achieved through her career to Ella, you know, to shine a light on.
And let's not forget, she is married to a musician.
That's true.
So
they had a room in the White House, a music room. There you go. Yeah, it was designed when they moved in.
I feel like that's something people don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That would make a great coffee table book. Like all the, like, document the transition between presidents.
Totally. Yeah.
And what they do, like, who was the president that put a bowling alley in? Was that FDR? Not FDR.
I think it was Eisenhower.
Was it Eisenhower?
But I could be wrong. It has happened before.
Now it's a lap pool, isn't it?
No, I think it's still a bowling alley.
Oh,
it's
it
there.
Is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's where two lanes.
That's why we need
the drunken heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why we need a coffee.
Yeah, although, look, just this week, you know, great week to do it. The First Lady broke ground on a new tennis court, you know, on the grounds of the White House. So it's constantly an evolution. Of course, she did it in stiletto heels, and, you know, gave some stilted speech about it. But that's not
the First Lady.
Stilted in stiletto.
Yeah, she broke some ground.
She broke some ground. Yeah. thank you for that. Yeah, I really appreciate that. It was a special episode to get to do, and you know, what we endeavor to do on our show.
Really
was,
raising that bar.
Well, what we do, I mean, to your point, I mean, it was kind of cute that we modeled it as like Broadway's biggest fan, but you know, the sort of goal of our show is to give a 360-degree view of the theater, and that includes fans, and that includes famous fans.
Yeah,
you know?
And if she's willing,
yeah,
by God,
we did a sit down with Michael Park and Jennifer Laura Thompson from Dear Evan Hansen, and it was a joint interview with someone who is quite literally a super fan,
Joanne Veneziano.
Correct. Yeah, she. We had a promotion we ran through Audience Rewards, and she, you know, used points to be a co-host on our show. And it was really fascinating to sit down, not only with, you know, two amazing actors who, you know, have had incredible careers, but someone who is, like, a diehard super fan. I mean, Joanne will see a show, like, 50 times or 100
and,
times.
And by extreme
great...
fan, no, it's more than that.
Yeah,
she saw the Spring Awakening, I think, 523 times. She saw Footloose over 700 times, which both of those shows are like, that's almost there every night. Yeah, that's those.
Right.
Dory
exactly.
interviewed those people when she was doing Show Business Road to Broadway, that documentary. Interviewing.
Right.
Did you guys watch Nailed It on Netflix? Do you know
what it is?
I've
heard of the show, yes.
The host, Nicole Byer, is in Dory's documentary outside of the theater Taboo, because she was
obsessed this portion of the
yeah.
show. Yeah,
she was one of the gals that went to Taboo
like
every night.
Right.
And she's in the documentary.
Yeah. It's the whole thing. Well, you mentioned the flea market, the Robbie flea market. I mean, I've done it 3 years now, and by the second year, I was recognizing the faces of the fans who were coming to my table to buy playbills. Like, I feel like I know these people. And
I got nervous because there was one girl I've seen every year for 14 years.
There you go. Yeah.
And I hadn't seen her yet, and I got real concerned. And then I saw her in, like, the last hour.
Broadway is a community, you know? We're all looking out for each other.
It is. It's so small, too.
It's so small.
You feel like if you come to New York, Broadway is just overwhelming. And it can be.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's also very small.
It's so real. When I started my website, Stage Left, I joined Twitter for the purpose of, you know, elevating my writing or whatever, because I was never a Twitter person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget the day, this is a silly story, but I'll never forget the day that I, like, basically completed the loop of all the people I needed to follow. And it was like, okay, well, that's it. Like, these are the 30 people who are writing about theater. And That's it. Like, yeah, these are the people. I did it.
When you see them all on a list, you're like...
Right? Like, I found them on Twitter, and now I'm following them all, and that's that. I've done it.
I thought this would take longer.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's so... Or even, you know, I mean, within a couple months of starting my site, I was getting invited to things. And I was like, wow, that was a goal for, like, you know, maybe at some point in the next couple of years, I'll get invited to cover something as press. I had this, like, inferiority complex. I'm like, who am I to, you know, write about theater? But it turns out, like, it's a small world, and there's not a lot of people who can afford to do this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm lucky I have a full-time job, so mm-hmm. I can, you know, sort of moonlight as a journalist. But, you know, there are no jobs in this, right? So it's a small community of people who are doing it. And I was blown away by how receptive that community was to my writing, and just the fact of, you know, that I could provide coverage to shows. And I love doing that. I love seeing something off Broadway or in a, you know, in a storage unit in Queens and, like, writing about it, because even the outlets, even the New York Times, well, that's a bad example because they actually do, but, you know, some of the other major outlets, like, they don't have the bandwidth. They have one person, and one person cannot see everything. It's just
that's
impossible.
A good point.
It's just impossible. There's so much theater in this town. I mean, it's wild. I feel like I'm at the theater 3 to 4 nights a week, sometimes even more than that. And I see maybe, you know, a third of what I could or would.
What is your tone? What kind of critic are you? Are you a Simon Cowell? Are you an Alicia Keys?
That's interesting.
Do you like everything? What's your eye?
I definitely don't like anything. I think I'm honest about how I feel about things. You know, Jamie's probably in a better position to comment on the tone of my writing. Because you've talked about this before. But I always try to be honest, because I think that's important. But I do not believe in being unnecessarily or indulgently cruel about anything.
Yeah.
And even the worst show that you see. And that comes from just, first off, how I was raised and how I live my life.
Yeah.
just like who I
not
am.
Not an asshole, everyone.
Right.
Spoiler alert.
But also because, you know, and I'm reminded of this, and I think it's important that we in this community do remind each other of this whenever we can, because it bears repeating, that we're all just people. And, you know, Rick Ellis, when we had him on the show, I can't remember if this was on mic or off mic, told a story about how, you know, no one sets out to create bad art, right? No one's trying to ruin mm-hmm. your night
by
giving you a bad play or a bad musical. You know, like, everyone's just trying to create and to express, right? So even when I do not like something and I'm honest about it, and I'm like, okay, this was bad, I try to remember as I'm writing, be very specific with the words that I use, because, mm-hmm. you know, although a lot of people say they don't read reviews, I don't read reviews, a lot of actors can spit back to you the exact words that someone wrote about them that hurt or hit in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So I endeavor to never be the person who provides them with that memory. that's not to say that, you know, I'm honest. If I don't like something, I don't like it. And then I also think that I try, what I've discovered, and Terry Teachout's another critic who I think does this, I don't talk as much about performances. I talk more about writing and production. I find that that's not where I go to. I mean, some writers, they will latch on to mm-hmm. someone's performance and they will talk graphically about it and they will be eloquent and they will describe. That's not my skill set, I have found, and it's not my inclination. So I talk a lot about design and writing and history, too, I think is the other thing.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I think what makes Rob an excellent theater critic is that he has such a wealth of knowledge about theater history, and he has such a passion for the history of where things came from and how things are created, that I think that it makes his voice very unique, because you don't talk so much about the individual performances,
right,
unless it's really magical,
right,
or transcending, and then that's a different thing.
I mean, they're only doing what was written. Or like, they're
right.
in the theater because
the
someone
people.
Bought it, you
but
know?
Right,
like,
right, right.
The way Rob's brain works, I think, is he likes to know how things are made and how things fit in the world,
mm-hmm.
and what that says, what the past says, what the future holds, all of those things. And I think that's what makes his interview so interesting.
That's what I try to do. I mean, you know, because it's interesting. There's a strange tension in the world of theater criticism itself, in that there's a sort of a commercial element to it, which, you know, is why anyone has a job, you know, because otherwise you would just pay people to come up with quotes, right? So there's, you know, this independent voice separate from the productions that is there to give a, basically a consumer report, right? Something that a customer can read that is not from that production, that is independent, that gives them an idea of what it is and should I see it, right? So there's that. And then there's what you might classically think of as criticism, which is something different. That's, you know, that's writing a review versus being a critic. And I don't do one or the other. I think I try to do both. And I think most critics try to do both. But they are two different things. I mean, think of criticism, you think of like literary criticism, right? It's an academic exercise. It's more about...
philosophically speaking.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's more about how does this play fit into the world, into the moment, into the canon of all plays that have ever been written, right? That's a different thing than you should go see Beautiful. Or you should go see Beetlejuice, or you shouldn't, because this is my experience of that specific show. Mm-hmm. You know,
sure.
So I try to couch things when I can, and some things naturally call for it, right? Like I just saw Slave Play. We were talking about Slave Play earlier, right? I don't know how you can write about Slave Play without contextualizing it in 2019, in October 2019, right?
Yeah.
Like this week.
Yeah.
These the headlines of this week. Like how can you talk about that play without doing that, right? So that's an obvious limit,
yeah.
Right? Whereas something, you know, like, you know, I don't know, I can't pick something out of that way, but, you know, something that's maybe less temporal or less political, although I think all theater is political, you know, it might not necessarily call for it,
sure.
You know? So, you know, criticism is more something like what you see at the New Yorker, right? What Vincent Cunningham mm-hmm. or Hilton Hall will write.
Well,
and they're the ones who win awards for criticism. You know, actual fancy awards, because that's what they're doing, real criticism. They're grappling with the work in a way that's not a consumer report. Or, the lighting was great. You know, that's not what they're interested in. They're interested in, like, how does this play speak to this moment? And mm-hmm. what does it mean? What's the significance of it?
Ooh.
Well
said. I also think, one final thing, you don't have an editor.
I do not.
You're not in, you're,
whoops.
No. By that I mean, you're only responsible to yourself.
That is correct.
And yes. So your voice is true to who you are. You don't have to think about sponsorship, advertising dollars.
Correct.
You don't have to think about readership outside
clicks.
Of clicks. Because this is a huge part of your life, but it's not the only thing in your life.
Right.
And you are self-governed.
Right.
Also, you are not in competition with any other critic.
Right.
And so I think sometimes what happens in this small pool of critics mm-hmm. is they get into competition with each other to write reviews that sometimes reflect a different agenda than the actual show that they're writing about. And you don't fall into any of that.
Right. I think that's true. And from time to time, I might be cognizant of that when I'm writing a review. Mm-hmm. You know, like because I'm not answerable to anyone, I don't have a print deadline other than, you know, when I decide to print. A good example of that is actually Beetlejuice. So Beetlejuice opened last season. It was the last show of the season, I believe. At least the last musical of the season to open. It opened in a week, 2 days after Tootsie opened. You know, in a month, April, that is just opening. And
yeah.
These critics are people, just like the people who are creating these shows and performing. And they, you know, woe is them, they have to go see shows and write about them. Yeah, but also they have to go see shows and write about them, and it's a job, and they're getting paid for it. It's serious
yeah.
work. It is, you know, let's respect that as well. But I read all the reviews for Beetlejuice and was kind of, like, horrified and shocked because I felt like basically no one, was respectful of the show. I sensed an undertow of, I'm exhausted. This is the last show I need to review of this season.
Mm.
I'm going to phone it in. And I don't want to point a finger at anyone in particular, but I just got this icky feeling after reading the reviews. And I just, to me, it was so not the show that I saw. And of course, it's every critic's kind of different. You know, but when the entire class of critics all seem to just casually disregard something that was a decade in the making, and the production design is unbelievable. Performances were fabulous. You know, there were just so many elements of it that I felt like just were given such a rough shot because of where it fell on the calendar, really for no other reason than the fact that it was in a week with three other openings, and you know, people were just tired, and that's the reality of it. So I didn't have to print on opening night. So I wasn't in the same position as them. So I got to sit with it. I went back and I saw the show a second time because I wanted to make sure that my impression of it was authentic to how I felt about it, not just a reaction to how others were reacting to it in the moment, right? So I went back to see it, and then I wrote my review. I published it in June, so it was the night before the Tony Awards I published it, I think. And I wrote what I thought was, in a way, an answer to what everyone else had done. Without explicitly
doing that.
But now you have.
So but now I have
go.
Said it.
Now
so
we all know.
Go read my review of Beetlejuice.
But enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me?
We ask everybody questions.
Yes.
Our first one is, what was your first impression of each of us?
Well, my first impression of both of you was online. Was actually, my first impression of both of you was by listening to your show, right? So because of this weird medium where we get to talk and basically be ourselves and then put it out there for people to listen to, I felt like I knew both of you before I actually met you. And it's interesting, when you told the story about how we met through direct message, I'd actually been following you guys on Instagram. I just hadn't been liking your pictures necessarily, but I was like looking at everything. So I felt really invested in the two of you. And then when you reached out to me, because I couldn't not comment on that shirt, right? Like, I just, it's like, my thumb is starting,
it's like a Ouija board.
It's what I'm here for.
And I responded within, seconds. And I was like, come to my party. I need to meet you guys. It was both of you. You were the conduit.
Yeah.
Right? And then when we met at the party, it was like, I think the first thing I said to you, Dana, was like, I'm obsessed with you.
Yeah, love at first sight.
Yeah. So
the easiest schmoozy party I've ever had to go to.
Well, there was a balloon animal maker.
That's a recipe.
Effortless.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meeting you two was effortless.
Yeah. I mean, I would say I felt an instant warmth upon meeting both of you at that party. That's when I met you.
Well, I am very warm.
Outside of the store.
Yeah, outside of the store. Yeah. I thought you were hysterical.
He's pointing at me.
Yeah, sorry. Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Like,
that's
funny hysterical.
Yes,
not being hysterical.
Ah! Yeah, like crazy. Yeah. No, like I'm just very wry.
Wry.
Yeah.
I like a rye.
Yeah.
Rye Rob.
That was my
Oh, wait, you're saying
it.
Dana was
yes,
rye.
Yes, Dana.
Rye. Oh,
very rye bread.
I loved how you carried
Dana
this.
On rye.
Dana on rye, yes.
I love how you waddled down the hallway.
No, but you had, you had a certain air about you that I found really
attractive. Amazing.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, it was love at first sight for both of you, for us. I'm going to speak. We're obsessed.
All we do is talk about you.
We can't. We're like worshiping at the ground you are sitting on.
Hi-ho! Hi-ho!
The other question we ask everyone is that obviously there are seven very well-known dwarves in history. If you were the eighth and ninth dwarves, what would your names be?
Wow. Well, I feel like today my name would be Coffee because I have a cold and I've been coughing quite a bit.
Coffee's cute. I love Coffee Dwarf.
And I also
like
coffee, too.
Yes.
I like the double.
That is my beverage of choice.
What is a coffee
homophone? That's a homophone.
Oh,
would you call me?
On National Coming Out Day. Rob's the homophone in the world.
Well, that's
real.
Yeah, that's real. That's very real.
Hooked on homophonics.
Yeah.
What's your name, Rob Russo?
Gosh, I'm kind of stumped here, which is not. And I'm the writer. You know, you feel like I should be able to.
Don't ever think it.
Right?
Just what's your essence? What's your?
It's my essence. I mean, anxious.
Anxious dwarf.
Especially this week, I've just been a ball of anxiety.
That's true.
Can Show Queenie be your dwarf name?
Show Queenie?
Yeah. No? Yeah.
Show Queenie was a blonde.
Oh, I literally was about to say that. When are we going on?
I watched you trying to say it. I stole it.
Show Queenie was a blonde. Yes.
Your mouth. I Ursula'd that from you.
No.
Where can people find you online? You and your podcast.
Well, our website is thefabulousinvalid.com, and you can see the banner that I spoke
of
earlier, and you can also listen to our episodes.
Mm-hmm.
You can also go to the Broadway Podcast Network and listen to both of our shows and many other fabulous shows. But if you really want to do me a solid, check us out on Twitter at Fabulous Invalid or Instagram at Fabulous Invalid. At
Wasted
Fabulous
characters.
Invalid.
Wait, yeah. Thank you.
Well, also, I don't think Twitter and Instagram let you have
that. Yeah,
the,
I don't, there was
something.
There
was a weird thing. Yeah, we couldn't. Yeah. Anyway.
And then you should do that. And then if you'd like to subscribe to Stage Left, I would love that. StageLeft.nyc. You can sign up.
Absolutely.
And I think you should.
Yeah. It's a fun little, it's not just reviews. I do a little digest of the news on a weekly basis called TLDR. So it's basically all the headlines that you need to know for the week in Broadway news. And then I do listings of what's opening and closing. So it's a helpful little guide.
And a very helpful critic's pick, which you can always just go right to the critic's pick and see what you need to see there.
Yeah. Thank you, Jamie.
I'm a big fan of your website.
They actually like each other. That makes me so
We're stepping up our game this week, folks.
We'll have to do a
guests.
Part two because I still have questions.
Yes, that would be fun.
And
we'll do our dates and then reconvene.
Oh, that's a great idea. A post-date podcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll be part of the BPN very soon. I don't know if all of our shit will be up by Tuesday
listen,
drops,
but if any of you want
to, relatively easy and painless to get everything up. Rob and I did it.
They're going
to
fix all of our old sound issues.
Yeah.
So that might take some time, but I know some listeners that would be very happy to go back and re-listen to something a little cleaner.
Absolutely.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we're all part of the Broadway Podcast
Network. Family.
I want there to be like a Broadway Podcast Network bowling.
Oh, that's a great
idea. The White House.
Do you know what I think I'm going to start doing?
Yeah, the White House.
I think
Not yet.
Yeah, not
we're going to wait.
I'm going to start doing the Built for the Stage. Is that what it's called?
Oh, yes.
The workout thing. Yeah, Joe
Incredible.
Roska.
I haven't done it because I'm poor, but I know people who do it and they love.
Yeah.
And they're working. And
there's like a Broadway workout
they
podcast. That's what we were talking about.
Yeah, Built for the Stage.
On that
100%.
On that note, bye.
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 In the Room with Stephen and Dana is produced by Stephen Farazee
and Dana Craig. Special thanks to Joel Wagoner for tinkling the ivories on our theme song. Hit him up at joelwagoner.com.
We apologize, and you're welcome. We'd also like to thank Jesse Wiener, W-I-E-N-E-R, for our jazzy original music sprinkled throughout each episode.
You can find him at jessewiener.com.
Last but certainly not least, we'd like to thank Kevin Thomas Garcia for taking all of our ridiculous photos. You can find him online at ktgnyc.com. We are all over the internet on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at InTheRoomPod.
Follow us, like us, share us, pimp us out. And don't forget to subscribe to In the Room Podcast. We everywhere, so subscribe. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suffs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SuffsMusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.